Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show. Do you know who's a great bunch of lads?
Us.
At Levi Solicitors is the answer.
Damn it, I was so close.
10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/the Square Ball. Dan Moylan with you, along with Michael Normanton and Moscow White as well. Daniel Chapman. This is propaganda then. We find out what's being said about Leeds United. This is the cold light of day show, isn't it? After we shoot from the hip on the match ball, with no notes really to speak of, and we
react. Just memories.
Just memories, yeah, instant memories, and recall in a
like
garbled fashion.
Polaroid.
Yes.
And now this is triple print.
Correct.
Except it would be if I'd watched the game again, which I sometimes do. Mm. Not this one.
No, I haven't even...
Absolutely fucked this game. It was awful the first time around.
I didn't even watch Match of the Day.
Just I did watch Match of the Day.
I reject it. Was it any good?
The Manchester Derby was quite fun.
Right.
I didn't enjoy our game as much, no. if I'm perfectly honest.
So we get our TSB Plus members to give us their feedback on the match ball, on the game, score the players out of 10 and all that. So the man of the match for this one, the headline on this one, duh, duh, duh.
It was close.
It was close, actually. There were four people in contention. Melier, Cooper, Adams and Cock. Cock came out on top with a score of 6.81. Jesse Marsh getting only 5.33 in the manager scores. We've got lots of exciting other scores to come, including that of Stuart Atwell. Mm. We'll get round to all that and some of the other... significant headline makers in this game. In terms of the voice messages that we ask our TSB Plus members to send in, thank you for all the ones that you did. Most of them are unusable, according to Levi Solicitors. So we've had to pare those down a little bit because, well, we don't want to get shut down, do we? So let's start off then on the general vibes. We'll get round to who's leading the Player of the Year tracker towards the back end of this episode. What is the general vibe then?
Ref was shit, as were we. It's more or less the general vibe. There are some positives as well, but I suppose that's confirmation bias on my part that that's what I took from it, because that was more or less my opinion.
It's the Villa perspective we'll be hearing later, that the ref was shit, but no, the ref was good, sorry.
Ref was good.
We were good. Stew was good.
Mm. Mm. So it's a shit game in general. This is what House of Stouts had to say on the matter.
Isn't the championship fun? That felt as close to a vintage Leeds game as I can recall. I was watching that on a dodgy stream here in New York because they don't get the channel. But, you know, that might as well have been Millwall refereed by Darren England.
I think people might be misremembering how little fun the championship was as well. I think people think it was fun because we won it.
I don't think he was trying to argue it was fun. I think he was saying Millwall refereed by Darren England was a dreadful experience.
Yeah, we may as well have been in the championship in the dregs of it.
Okay.
You're misremembering. Presenting an entire house of stouts. And they, stouts. Imagine, is it stouts or stouts? I thought it's stouts. Well, imagine an entire house full of drunk stouts.
Yes.
Mm. You know the difference between a weasel and a stoat, isn't it? That there's one stoat's a weaselly recognisable and the other's a stoutly different. Anyway, there was times in it when it did feel quite championshipy, not just the ref, but the ball was just kind of knocking from one team to the other and nobody really getting it down. And I was cast back to some of the more miserable mid-table championship games. I guess mid-table anywhere is not going to be great, but there's the raised expectations of the Premier League where I think this game fell slightly short of what you want from your Super Sunday 4:30 p.m. after a month away.
Yes, and Jason Kavanagh, which are we going for?
It's up to you.
Jason, get in touch, let us know. Disciplinary record. We reckon we've got disciplinary problems. 3 red cards in 19 games under Marsh. 4 if you include Marsh's himself.
Yeah, it's not looking great, you have to say. And Sinisterra, I've watched it back. It was daft. I mean, the one thing, we'll get on to the referee.
By the way, I said on the match ball, I didn't remember his first one. I do now, having thought
and
about
it. Nout.
I still don't think that needed a yellow.
No.
I think it was because he...
It was fucking McGinn going down trying to get someone booked. McGinn was determined to get someone booked from the moment he was booked, and he was going down under every tackle. If he stays up or just stumbles a bit, he doesn't get booked for that.
I think he yellowed him because there was no attempt to play the ball and he tripped him.
He's just running after him, yeah. I think.
I think both decisions were kind of discretionary. And the first one, if you'd not given a yellow card, nobody would have ever thought about that foul ever again. Nobody would have remembered it. Nobody would have been bringing it up saying, well, why wasn't that a yellow card? Nobody would have cared. I've been going back and forth in my mind as to whether this matters, but he's a winger. And what you're trying to achieve by booking him is kind of to stop this. You're trying to put a stop to serious foul play. You know, if Sinisterra had done that 3 times, then you maybe bring a card out and say, look, obviously this is a habit. But if a winger makes a clumsy tackle after 20 minutes on the edge of Villa's penalty area, what does a yellow card really achieve?
What's the point? Don't give them to us. Give them to them, but not us.
I feel that way about the second one as well, because I made the mistake of seeing Roy Keane and Micah Richards talking about it on Sky, and there was almost this air of glee. It was like, there, you see, that's against the rules. Get off the... Roy Keane was, don't moan about it, get down the tunnel. Like, well, what do we really gain from like a really good player who does one clumsy foul and then sticks his leg out at a free kick, and now he doesn't just miss the second half of this game, but he's not even going to be allowed on the pitch at Crystal Palace because of this terrible things that he's done in this game.
Roy Keane noted for accepting referees' decisions without any argument.
I mean, the hypocrisy is definitely one factor of it, but it's just, you know, it's these things where, especially because the Atwell gave the Villa players a chance every single time. Sinisterra did it. One tackle, one incident of stopping a free kick. Off.
I think what you're saying is it's not fair.
The one where Sinisterra was
not fair.
The free kick he blocked as well. If you watch what the free kick was initially given for as well, it's the softest shit you've ever seen. It's Luiz running away from someone and just falling over.
So if both yellow cards shouldn't have been yellow cards.
Well, it shouldn't have been a free kick in the first. Sinisterra shouldn't have had to block that free kick because it shouldn't have been a free kick.
Good. Let's hear from I won't say the name because he introduces himself.
Hey up, Bobby Eyebrows here. Let's just think about it in a really positive light. The positivity. Let's think about positive. Positive vibes. Positive vibes are we didn't lose. Positive vibes are we didn't lose. Positive vibes are we didn't lose. I don't think there's any more positive vibes, but we didn't lose, so that's all right. Other than that, it was absolute shite. Like bollocks shite. Fucking hairy knackers and that shite. Anyway, see ya. Bye.
Bobby Eyebrows, have we found out where Bobby Eyebrows is actually from now? Because we thought there's sort of a Middlesbrough-y kind of vibe about the voice.
Yeah, I think Middlesbrough and Whitby were speculated about, weren't they? But yeah, he's from Rothwell, but has been living in Newcastle for over 20 years. So that's why he's developed his mongrel accent.
Midway through.
So yeah, he's somewhere around the T's at the moment. If he stays in Newcastle, he'll creep up, I guess.
I enjoyed the positivity.
Yes, and I did note that. I did note it. We need some wins, says Peter V. No win in the league since the 21st of August. I mean, admittedly, you know, we've had a month off, haven't we? So, quite hard to win when you're not playing.
It's like when they include these stats over summer, you get a commentator who'll say, it's been 6 months since so-and-so scored. And you think, well, 3 of them, there was no games or whatever.
I was going to say, you saw that with the form guide after we got promoted again. Like, Leeds haven't won against Liverpool in 15 years or whatever, 20 years.
Haven't won at Brentford for 50 years because they were in Division 4.
Yes, let's rattle through some of the other thoughts then. There was themes around coping with shit housing, the lack of fluidity in attack, and we did have some defensive positives though, however.
I think that fits with, we moved on from Peter V's point very quickly, just decided he was bang wrong and moved on. We do need some wins, but we haven't lost, and I think that fits. The thing with...
lost against Brentford.
We haven't lost for a month though.
We haven't lost for unbeaten, yeah.
In that one game, we didn't lose. I'm still on Bobby Eyebrows' positive.
No, Cooper said it in the post match, didn't he? He said, you know, under those circumstances, all right, if we're not going to win and it's backs to the wall, we make sure we don't lose, which is what we all took out of it in the end. And let's face it, the crowd applauded the team off at the end.
And where it sort of creeps over into coping with shithousing and the lack of fluidity in attack, which seems to be the the theme of what everybody's talking about with Leeds since the game. A lot of that, I think time might help us in this, because our attack that was Sinisterra's second start in the league.
Really?
And his first with Rodrigo, because he had Gelhart started at Brentford, didn't he? And we've not had Bamford in there. We've had Sinisterra and Aronson were both away for the last 2 weeks. We've only played 7 games. And I think a lot of what looks like this kind of things not quite clicking together going forward, it's still, even though it is October, early in the season with a lot of new players trying to click. So I've got some optimism that this gets better the more we do it. And if we get some, you know, we've got an actual month of football before we have to take another 2 off. Maybe it's 2023 when this all starts to look good. But some of Marsh's preference for football is kind of, we don't do slow build up and we don't keep the ball. So it's all about kind of winning the ball high and then these sharp, quick moments to get in. And those need the players to be kind of quite instinctively know where each other is. And, you know, if Sinisterra has literally never played a first team game of football with Rodrigo in his entire life, then it's not going to be 100% straight off from the start. So
PT picks up and it says we appear to get 3 players close together and then ping it around until we lose the ball to the opposition. And they do play in tight areas because they do lots of rondos, don't they, in pre-season training, which is the small circles where they tap it around each other.
I mean, that was the problem at the end of last season when, I guess, going back to the previous game against Villa, when they did look at us and go, what the fuck are we actually trying to do here? Because it was just everyone stood on each other's feet in the middle of the pitch and no one out wide whatsoever. So it is a bit like that. And when it doesn't work, it looks pretty awful at points.
Whether the tactics are actually any good long term is kind of a different thing. Certainly we saw against Chelsea what they're capable of, but getting that consistency and getting it to actually look as good as it could look, I think there's still some time to blend this in. And yeah, so Sinisterra having only started 2 matches, because he's had that kind of, he did the one in the League Cup as well and he's had some sub appearances, but the kind of, I think Marsh said the other week that the one thing they've been working on with him is getting his fitness, because he's never known fitness like what Leeds need from a player. He's never been asked to do that before. So that's another thing as well, is like when Sinisterra gets fully Premier League fit and the naivety that people like Roy Keane seem to be reveling in him. That's the other thing that annoyed me about it. It's like his second game in the Premier League, there was a feeling with the way Keane was talking. It's like as if we caught him out. We got him, sent him off, showed him what's, you know, we can't do that in this league. And, you know, for a young man playing his second game, felt a bit
Roy Keane's, he's always going to find something to get angry about, don't he? Yeah.
It's all that letter of the law business and, well, he's got to learn you can't do that. And it's like, well, you know, he can do things that lots of other players in this league can't do, like beat 7 players and shoot into the net, bang, ping off the crossbar and beautifully and dazzling with skills and stuff. No, but he's got to learn not to dangle a leg out at a free kick. You bore me, people. You just bore me. But the more games he plays, the better he'll get. And I hope, hopefully...
not being suspended would help.
It would, which is the other pain of it. I don't know how many more games Jack Harrison needs to play better than he did on Sunday, but maybe that's just a blip. And also trying to get that unit together, because that's where all the new players are, essentially. If you look at who played well at the back, Stroik, Cooper, Cock, Melier, they've been here for ages. And then in front of them, it is Adams and Rocker, brand new. Aronson's new. Sinisterra's brand new. Rodrigo, very old. So there's a lot of...
very old.
The attacking players were basically all badly rated this weekend. When you look at it, I think Sinisterra was bottom, but then you've had like Jackie and Rodrigo with the next 2 on there. So
yeah, Sinisterra got 4.67 out of 10.
Which, but on his actual performance, he did some of our best bits.
Yeah, Rodrigo got sent off. Rodrigo 5.53, Bamford 6.16. But just let's go back to the other end and just mention the defensive positives, actually. Atwell is a biased Brummie character, suggests that, I mean, is this damning him with faint praise? But Firpo was surprisingly okay. Although he did score 5.38, which was the second lowest on the team.
I mean, this is, the few people got in touch to say that it was better defensively, but I sort of think they still had too many chances. I know it was against 10 men and it's always going to be difficult. But
what did you expect though when we went down to 10?
But I don't know. The Coutinho one where it hit the inside of the post and then it goes back to Watkins and for some reason he uses these... Do you use left and he should use his right or something? He just completely,
hilarious.
He just completely fucks it up anyway and ends up sort of 2 foot stamping on the ball and it just looks really untidy. But there was that chance. There was Watkins just threw on goal a couple of times. And
I'll repeat the question though. What did you expect when we were down to 10 men and we went to 5 at the back, which worked, by the way. People picked that out.
Yeah.
As Stephen points it out, Jake's in Florida as well, points out that the width worked when we went to 5 at the back because it gave us, you know, the fullbacks were able to then try and counteract Villa's width. So, I mean, that's the thing is when you get somebody sent off 2 minutes into the second half, whatever it was, it's over as a contest, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
To all intents and purposes. And you know you're going to be on the back foot. And I think, obviously, going 5 at the back does then invite them on and you're going to sit deeper. But I thought we coped with it all right, I think, under the circumstances.
I think so. I mean, we'll talk about the attack momentum graph that's from SofaScore, and the second half is just Aston Villa. Like, from you can see the opening minutes of it, there's basically not much happening. Then Sinisterra sent off, and then it is just Aston Villa to varying degrees of pressure. But they didn't look, it's not like they were carving out a good chance every 2 or 3 minutes. Like when we played against Man City or Liverpool last year, for example, and they were battering us, and every time they went forward, they were having a clear shot on goal. Yeah. It was nothing like that. But then Villa are nothing like as good as that. So
yeah, I mean, the Watkins one was stoppage time, wasn't it, that really upset Steve Gerrard? Which he got some handbag style woos from the West Stand when he kicked a bottle away. And then the Coutinho one, you know, that's a very good player making a very good chance, but pinging it off the post anyway. And yeah, they were threatening apart from that, but we were about as safe as we could be. With 10 players.
And given that we're constantly conceding possession as well in doing that.
Which is why I'm surprised that Atwell is a bias, but we thought Firpo was good because I don't have any particular... I would like Firpo to burst through this season and
to be
brilliant.
Better.
Yeah, to be better. but I was watching him on Sunday thinking, this is dreadful. He picked up on one bit of danger really well that nobody else had spotted. And I was like, oh, that's good. And then he just booted the ball straight to John McGinn. I was like, fucking hell, Junior, come on. Well, and there were a couple of that where his... his head just didn't seem on it. I don't know what's up with him.
But he doesn't. He's footballing. He's a bit brainless footballing wise, isn't he?
He's a Labrador.
Yeah. Labrador with a balloon.
Just chasing a ball around. And he's occasionally it looks all right. But then, I mean, it summed up in pre season in the Blackpool game where you're watching thinking, Firpo looks good here. And then someone ran at him and it just.
I mean, he is just.
It just looks so effortless to go
first. He's putting the first minutes in his legs this season. So I want to at least give him that.
Yeah.
You know, to see how he gets on. Sol, actually, before we get into individual players, does a good roundup kind of the whole thing. It's a jumble of good points, this has been labelled as. Melier the flappy spider, Firpo random header generator, Crescenzio's struggle to get involved, has Marsh's own aggression poisoned the mind of our pure young boys and got them copying him to our detriment, has Rodrigo reverted to software version 1.0, and does Yank Badger have to get hurt before he gets any protection from Yank-hating refs?
He did get battered about, the old Brendan.
We have a clip on this, actually.
Oh, we do, do we? Should we get into Aronson then? He's got 5.96 out of 10, by the way. And his average score over the season is gradually dropping off now, but he's still performing well in the old Player of the Year stakes. This is Isaac.
As long as we're piling on with the referee's uneven application of the laws of the game, how about Brendan Aronson's repeated brutalizing throughout this game? He took so many blows to the lower leg. I can't imagine how he's going to feel just walking tomorrow. And, you know, yes, one of them was a legitimate tackle. But he got hit over and over and over, very close to yellow cards over and over. And I think at some point you got to call someone on the team. Well, yeah, that might have, you know, just been a foul, but your team has been kicking the shit out of him all game. And can somebody please mess up Steven Gerrard's fucking hair?
I don't think it moves.
No,
I don't think it moves. Yeah, on that, I think Villa were quite cute in that they walked that line very, very well from a cynical point of view. It was a lot more of kind of a, it's game, not gamesmanship, is, you know what I mean? Like the
clickmanship.
Yeah.
I think Aronson does go down fairly easily. But when you look at, for example, the free kick that led to Sinisterra blocking it. Aronson had hundreds of those, it felt like. It felt like every time he got the ball, someone kicked him to that degree, and we never got a free kick for it.
Mm.
Whereas it felt like every time Villa did it, because John McGinn was man-marking the ref and telling him what to do for most of the game.
Speaking of clicky then, Eldrick points out that he's the best shithouse ever, which was excellent. We did touch on this on the match ball, so we don't necessarily need to repeat it. But just when he does it, you know what he's doing, you can see him doing it, and it winds people up, and it's great. And so again, good when we do it. Bad when
but it absolutely shines a light on how fucking useless referees are, because they don't know what to, they can't deal with things that are slightly outside of the norm, because he's doing weird stuff and treading a line that they don't quite know what to do with it. He just gets away with it.
I mean, that it all feeds into Atwell not remembering that he'd booked Sinisterra. Mm. And I think the way he deals with different players definitely comes into part of it, because he seemed terrified of Click, which is bizarre, because, I mean, who matches Click is, you know, coming off the bench for Leeds United. He's not a superstar of world football, and yet something about him just had this power over Atwell where he just could not deal with him. And I do wonder.
In fact, it was Atwell in the Chelsea game as well, where again Click came on and did about three yellow card offences in 5 minutes, and Atwell just let him get away with it.
Of course, his brain. And it's the same with, like, Mings gets a talking to, you know, England international, former captain of Aston Villa. Sinisterra, he's never seen him play before in his life, so just book him, don't matter. I think Click could do with taking Tyler Adams for some one-on-one education on how to do the Clickmanship, because when it was referred to in that big roundup from Sol about has Marsh, does his aggression poison the young player's mind? I don't know if it comes from Jesse Marsh, but I think Tyler Adams is one. I keep looking at him in games like this. It's been a question of how we deal with teams like Aston Villa when they come and try and slow us down. And his response seems to be to get really, really angry and to get in the referee's face in a way that players like McGinn and Click have the ability to do it without winding the referee up the way that Adams, I don't know if it's his voice, if it's his face, something about the way he approaches them seems to rub them up the wrong way. And he could, a little bit like how Marsh was saying after Brentford, that he's like, I have to maybe learn that the way I'm dealing with referees on the touchline isn't going to work. Adams, now he's had 7 games in the Premier League, maybe he's just have a review and go to the Clicky and say, look, how do I get in the ear of referees without coming across angry? Seems to be that he lets himself show how angry he is instead of making the point that it's punishment should be the other team. So he attracts attention to how angry and antsy and aggressive he's being,
rather than the opposition.
While he's trying to highlight that in the opposition. And it's you know, it's a adaptation to the Premier League, but he stands out for it. And I think when we are dealing with this for the rest of the season, those things will hopefully Click is the perfect player to give him that education, turn him into
like the dark arts teacher at Hogwarts.
Exactly.
But not the defence against the dark arts. Or maybe so.
I mean, I say exactly. I've never seen or read any of the things.
Just roll with me on it. Anyway, yeah. Click scored quite highly relative to the rest of the team, 6.64. Should we hear about the big, even sexier pirate?
Well, that sucked. On a brighter note, Pascal's got even more handsome, as if such a thing was possible. Lord, he give me the vapors.
What did that say?
I don't know.
He said he was speaking like
a youth?
A southern American, a woman from the American South, saying, Lord, he gives me the vapors.
I was going to say vapors or vipers.
No, they feel very different.
A nest of snakes.
No, it could be sexy, though.
They do love a good pit viper, though, don't they, in the Deep South?
He's talking about fainting onto a couch of some kind. So that's that. And yeah, he's looking great.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But, and Luke Ayling bringing his own air of mystery on the other side now as well.
Pat Bamford's hair is the other thing. It was I think it was Liam Cooper the other week referred to. He says that Bamford's target seems to be an Ayling style man bun. I don't know if he's kind of trying to emulate Haaland, but
is he having a midlife crisis already?
It's getting longer and longer.
I mean, 30's not that far off for him. Maybe he's got that looming on the horizon. He's panicking a little bit. I don't know. I'm looking at you, Michael.
And I'm really, I'm up for it. I would love to see Bamford like really grow it to strike length and then
Jesus.
Do whatever
it'd be awful. He does next.
It would be great.
I mean,
even if it is awful, it would be great to see.
He's hugely injury prone as well. He'd probably end up catching it in some bloody machinery and ripping his scalp off or something. I think he should keep it nice and safe.
That industrial accident.
Or a hairnet, maybe.
That was the biggest kind of groan of all in Marsh's post-match press conference, where he's like, I didn't tell you this, but because I didn't want it to be a story, which he did absolutely the right thing of not mentioning it pre-match, but he had a little bit of a knock, so he didn't train all week. It's like, for God's sake, we didn't even play for a month. What has he done? And we really, really need, because you saw when Bamford came on, when he got the ball, charges into the penalty area, he made a chance for himself where he had the shot that was saved, and he made the chance for Click that, to be fair, it was a great tackle from McGinn, got back to stop him. But you saw how, in what we're trying to do, Bamford can be really good, but he can't be really good if he can't just put a week of training together. I don't know how you solve it. I wonder
how many full weeks he's been fit in the past 12 months, because it really can't be very many.
I just feel like appealing to him, just grabbing him by the hair and just saying, stay fit. I don't know how else you do it. What else do you do to somebody to just get that? I'm sure he knows. I'm not telling him anything.
He's
he
made
know.
Of candy floss, isn't he?
But he didn't used to be. I mean, he had the two big injuries in his first season, but that was both ACL, wasn't it? It was like bad knee injuries, not just general fitness. But he just seems to never be able to get it. And, you know, I don't think that's a permanent thing, but I don't know.
You do get one injury leading to another, don't you? Yeah. I was listening to former Leeds United striker Malcolm Christie, in fact, on a podcast, basically saying how when he started getting injuries and then he was just fucked. It was just one thing led into another and then he retired. So good luck back, Bamford.
Anyway, on to Jesse himself. Jesse got 5.33. The highlights of the comments that came in from Jim saying, apparently we have a terrible manager, which I think is probably up into debate at this stage. Feels a little bit early to cast that judgment on him.
He managed this game well from the press box, because the changes to go five at the back were exactly what we needed and worked. Patience is it's hard to find, but last season was the end of it. Was all, well, it's not his players, he's working with the squad that he's inherited, so what do we expect? It can only be so good. And and to be fair, after we played Villa last season, which was probably the worst performance, like it felt like the worst performance Leeds have put in for years, we were never that bad again. It gradually kind of, it bobbed along and we got through. This year, he's got his players in, but he's barely, you know, he's had seven games with them. So to like make it any kind of like, he's terrible, give him a Bruno Large, Scotty Parker letter at this point.
Cooper's hanging on.
Yeah. And Cooper's had untold millions of pounds to spend. Well, he's had untold millions of players. I don't know how much they've actually spent.
Before we came on air, Michael, what was the tweet you mentioned about Cooper that you'd seen?
It was ages ago, sorry, but it just always makes you laugh that he looks like a man who's constantly just got out of a headlock.
You love it. Let's get round to the moment we've all been waiting for, which was the Stuart Atwell chat. Stuart Stephen Atwell, in this game, scored out of 10, our TSP Plus members, who I think may be a little bit biased towards Leeds, may have affected their scoring.
No, I think this is fair.
Fair. 0.38 out of 10 average score.
Yeah, it's not. We don't score to one. It's not decimal places on the scoring. It is out of 10.
If we were rounding, it would be zero.
Yeah.
Which is about right.
Yes.
Somebody, there were a couple of people gave him 4.
Really?
So that's why it's abnormally high.
Although I did notice one bit of feedback came from someone who subscribes to Squareball Plus and is an Everton fan. I know.
That shocked us into silence, did that, didn't it?
I was the same. I was like, what? They're American, in fairness, so they like hearing about the American players.
Right.
But even so, pay money to listen to a Leeds United podcast.
Right. No, more people should do that, I think.
Well, I mean,
I think the more people pay money to pay to listen to this Leeds United podcast, the better it can be. The easier it is for us to do it, the more stuff we can do. It's the magic that holds it together.
Yes,
so
indeed.
If you are, whoever you support, please subscribe.
Yeah, and the pound's recovering against the dollar a little bit now, so get in there quick before it starts to go. Anyway.
Stuart, oh, yeah, there's never been a better time if you are in the United States and to subscribe. We've got so many American players, and we love them all, and we'll keep you updated. Every little thing they do... Oh, stop now.
Stuart Stephen Atwell.
But we do need them.
It's his 40th birthday this week, you know. He turns 40 on Thursday.
Should we send him a cake?
How do you think he'll celebrate?
With the cake that we send him?
A visit to Keith Stroud's small holding.
What we could do, we could send him a big cake of shit that he's forced to consume, because that's exactly what happened to us on Sunday. We could return the favour. Do you know that he was born in Nuneaton, a mere 22 miles away from Villa Park? You know, I checked that. Do you know, I checked this morning, actually, Michael, it's a bit stalkery, but do you know how close you live to Ellen Road?
It's about 16 miles.
It's 15, the shortest route is 15 miles. Oh, yeah. So that's sort of not a million miles away from how far Atwell lives from.
Seven miles, in fact.
Yeah, it's not a huge difference. It's about three quarters-ish.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. That's
interesting.
And that's close, and you're a big Leeds
though
fan.
He's a Luton fan, apparently.
Is that right?
Though, isn't it?
One of that crowd of freaks.
Went him and Angus have a little bond over that. Say, oh, come on. Those Luton boys together.
20th of September 2008. So he must have celebrated the anniversary of this fairly recently. He gave the ghost goal to Reading in a game at Watford. Do you remember that? Which was when the line...
I was watching it.
Yeah, it was a guy called Nigel Bannister accidentally flagged for a goal. Oh no, I've given a goal instead of giving a corner. And Atwell just sort of went along with this madcap scheme. Yeah, go on then, you can have a goal.
It is weird watching it. And also it's worth catching up on YouTube as well to watch Chris Kamara describing it on Soccer Saturday, because he's making a complete mess of it, but in a brilliant Chris Kamara way, where I think he mistakes Jimmy Kebby for Noel Hunt at one point, which bear in mind the physical differences between them.
Yeah.
It's fairly big.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's at no point does it ever look like it's gone in. It's not like it's cleared off the line at any point. It's cleared from the touchline at one stage, and that's when the linesman flags for a goal. And having watched that, Stuart Atwell goes, I'm going to go with it. Yeah.
He's seen something I missed.
He's obviously seen it go between the posts.
Would it surprise me to tell you, I'll try that again. Would it surprise you if I told you, thanks. Would it surprise you if I told you that he was demoted from his position in the referees select group in 2012 just for basically being really bad at his job?
And has he basically been promoted again because loads of refs retired?
Yes.
And they were like, we just need someone.
He was promoted back in about 2014 or 16 or something anyway. It's great. His Wikipedia page is worth a look, because I wonder who's edited this, because apparently this move was said by whom, citation needed probably, to come by mutual consent. Please relegate me.
One of those breakups.
Yeah.
I think it's best we break up, isn't it? Yes.
We have got more Atwell on Propaganda Extra as well, the members show.
We can hear from the man himself. We were saying
brilliant.
On the match ball, we wanted to hear from referees. We can hear Stuart giving an account of himself.
In the meantime, let's hear from Dale.
Regarding Stuart, well, without wanting to be too libelous, he is the perfect example of why capital punishment should be brought back. What a complete and utter fuckwit. And Steven Gerrard needs to go learn about what a football game entails.
I mean, Michael, you were advocating some prison vigilante justice.
Throwing the boiled kettle over him full of sugar. But yeah,
don't do that, by the way. That's it's really, really dangerous.
Yeah, don't do that.
And you mentioned that because you'd watched a film with Sean Bean in it.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
His prison thing. It's good. It's a good program.
Where that happens. So that's why you mentioned it. But don't do that.
No. Please. And no, should anyone send him to the gallows, which is what was being advocated there by Dale. I mean, it might keep him in line, I suppose, if that was the threat. But no, it's but he was bad. I think we can agree on that. In fact, this is not from our feedback, in fact, but I was looking on wacko.com, the Leeds United forum, and someone on there had looked at total fouls this weekend across the league. And
Je connais.
And there were 19 fouls on average across the games this week. And in our game, 35, of which we committed 23. And it was the same ref who did the Chelsea game, and we only committed 16 fouls in that.
Yeah, which was our... highest amount of fouls. From memory, I thought it had been 18, but 16. And that had been our record so far. So it was a big leap from there to what he gave on Sunday. And he was just, he was just rubbish. So people have tried to defend him by saying he got all the big calls right, and that you couldn't argue with any of the bookings or the big decisions he made. But it's the decisions he didn't make that were the really annoying ones. The fact that it took, and I touched on it before, how many times Leon Bailey had to transgress before he got a yellow card. Sinisterra did two things wrong in the entire match and got sent off. And it's just that just doesn't work.
And in terms of the consistency across games as well, I don't believe the game we watched was double the physicality of any of these other games, which it would suggest it was, given the amount of
fouls
given.
They were just shit doing fouls. That was it. Our timing's bad. If you want to do the sneaky fouls, do them better.
I mean, I know when you go down to 10 men, I imagine there's a stat that probably shows you do make more fouls when you're down to 10 men because you're trying to break up play a bit more and stuff. So there's maybe a slight increase there, but 35. And yeah, in a game where I think the ball was only in play for 51 minutes, I saw as the stat as well.
We are the lowest in the division by some distance, aren't we?
And ball in play doesn't include things like when goalkeepers are just waiting around with the ball at the feet and stuff. So actually not really in play for all that time, because Martinez was spending bloody loads of time in the first half just walking around with it.
He did get told, though, didn't he?
He did get told.
He went over and told him.
He didn't tap his watch. He didn't go for the watch tap this time.
And then in the second half, in fairness, Melier was doing it. Every cross he caught, he would lay down on the ball and do that thing.
But he told Melier off for that,
really quickly,
in the first
half.
So the first time he'd done it, he went over. And that was the thing with, again, it's about understanding the match. And that's where I think Atwell let himself down, understanding what Sinisterra is doing on the pitch and understanding what the two teams are doing. Because Aston Villa, clearly, Leon Bailey, in the first 2 minutes, sets out what Villa are going to do. And then the goalkeeper does it and Mings does it and he's having to speak to them. So we all know that's what Aston Villa are doing. But you could see as well, Leeds are taking all the free kicks quickly. We're trying to get the ball into play quickly. It was obvious that there was this disparity between the two teams playing.
Which Atwell spotted, by the way.
But then why, when Melier holds onto the ball for about 10 seconds, is he over there telling him to stop time wasting? We were not.
I think it's because he's an idiot, Moscow.
Exactly. We'd not even got down to 10 men in that time. We're not...
An idiot bitch, says Boney M.
We're not...
An idiot bitch.
We weren't time wasting in the match as a team. It was not our intention as a ploy or a tactic. So why Melier needed the same telling off that Martinez got, and why Sinisterra needed booking as if he'd been doing it the whole first half as well, it just doesn't fit in with understanding the way that the game was being played and what the two teams were trying to do and why.
Well, I told you, Moscow, on the match ball, too pure for this division.
Yeah. Melier and Mings and whoever get warnings, Sinisterra gets booked. Just, it doesn't make any
sense. It's the way Sinisterra chose to slow play down was his problem.
But then what's... Yeah, exactly.
It's doing the same thing, but his method of doing it was more...
And that's if
obvious,
and that's where it's kind of, it's just so ridiculous that if the player who booted the free kick had booted it straight at him instead of to his right, he wouldn't have put his leg out and he wouldn't have been booked.
Mm.
So one's potential, because I've been thinking about this a lot, if we could go back, it's too late to do it now unless we really want to fuck the game up. But if we could go back 150 years to when they're in that Sheffield pub and they're sorting all the rules out, if somebody had just gone, right, next one, sin bins, are we doing sin bins? Yes. Then that would have been perfect for this, for these little things to... Sinisterra doesn't deserve to miss the whole second half, doesn't deserve to miss the game at Crystal Palace. But you could maybe say, right, that is 10 minutes off the pitch. Right. And it's a sanction, because you don't want to be down to 10 players for any amount of time in a Premier League match, because Coutinho and Watkins and Leon Bailey, and they can bring Buendia on, all these exciting players who Gerrard is ruining, could potentially hurt you if they had a good manager who would let them. And so you don't want to be without for 10 minutes. But the punishment of an entire half and then a full match the week after is just so far out of kilter with what Sinisterra actually did. And then it might give the referee something he could use against Martinez. I mean, imagine sin binning the goalkeeper for 10 minutes.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
It would be, but it would be probably...
Play like keeper rush for a bit.
And it would be a way of cutting it out, but without going as far as, you know, a suspension for a goalkeeper for time wasting.
Make him take the gloves off for 10 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, you know.
Just make it a little bit more difficult.
Put honey on your hands to attract bees.
It's just a bag.
If you're having to deal with danger for 5 minutes.
The threat
of stinging. No?
Go back to when...
You look confused, Michael.
Go back to when the Human League and having 17, we're sorting out the rules of football.
Right, listen, Sam, I think, sums it up well. Says, alone in isolation, none of the decisions were particularly bad, but with the context of the entire game, I struggle to come up with an explanation that doesn't leave me sounding like Matt Letizia. It makes you think. Let's get on to Player of the Year then.
Just to throw forward for a bit more, Stuart Atwell.
Oh,
him,
great.
In Propaganda Extra, there is him talking about refereeing, and I think it's quite informative the way he talks about it. You can see what he's trying to do, and you can also see where it's gone so badly wrong for him.
Right. Okay.
So if you are an Everton fan, subscribe to us. You can listen to that very shortly.
Yeah, Player of the Year then. So the ratings that we're putting into our spreadsheet, which is keeping track of it over the course of the season. Your top three: Aronson 7.09, Adams with 7.17. And Melier still leading Player of the Year with 7.13. Interestingly, they're the only three over seven at the minute of an average across the season. It feels like that sort of season at the minute, doesn't it? A couple of decent performances and the rest of them a bit so-so, but just sort of ticking along.
A season that started well and slid into a relegation battle.
But then the one, the big change
Michael.
From Brentford is we didn't concede five.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
We didn't concede any.
Yeah, and the other thing that was good...
And that's better.
From a defence, although Melier had a bit of a mad game on crosses, he was still as good as ever on shot stopping. But corners, Cooper and Rodrigo were dealing with all them at the front post really well, so that was looking quite good too. So if it is taking a little bit of time, if that's the only problem for the fluidity,
Villa have scored twice direct from corners this season as well, haven't they?
Well, and I think
kicking
it straight in the net. They've done it twice.
Really?
Mm.
I think we set up quite well to deal with it because we had both Cooper and Rodrigo at the front post just heading it away, and that'll stop that, won't it? But while we're waiting for the fluidity to click, which I don't know if fluidity can, going forward, like if the defence can just not concede five, then maybe the answer is just not to play Llorente.
Right, Jesse Marsh is on for a 6.01 out of 10 so far. And if you want to read the full listings, we will be tracking those in the mag across the course of the season as well. And thank you if you bought it, by the way, across the weekend. It's available on sale from the website.
We did get very good sales. I think people took pity on us because they realised we hadn't been able to sell.
Because we got diddled by the Forest postponement, didn't we?
We did.
I mean, being diddled, the Queen died. But if that's the way you want to phrase it...
I wasn't talking about that specifically.
We got done out of our rightful day of sales for nout. There was a decent reason for it, wasn't there?
But I mean, if I was coming at that topic again, I might phrase it differently, thinking about that.
But thanks to the people who paid £2.50 to buy.
I was thinking of effect.
Excellent.
I was thinking about effect rather than cause, is what I was thinking. Anyway, we've got the Villa half of Propaganda to come as well, so we're going to record that next and look out for that in your feeds, video and podcast after this. Thanks for watching and listening. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.